Welcome to the Flutter 101 podcast, a podcast focusing on Flutter and Dart. My name is Vince Varga, and welcome to the show. In this episode, my guest is Waleed Arshad, and we talked about state management in Flutter. Waleed is Pakistan's first Google Developer Expert in Flutter and GDE in Dart. He is the author of the book, Managing State in Flutter Pragmatically, Discover How to Adopt the Best State Management Approach for Scaling Your Flutter App. We talked about why state management is such a hot topic amongst Flutter developers, and we talked about different state management options: set state, inherited widget, provider, river pod, block, qubit, mobx, and more. We also discussed whether choosing this or that state management library is even so important as we thought previously, if we layer, design, or architect, whichever verb you want to use, our application correctly. At the time of recording this episode, I couldn't read the book yet. It wasn't public yet. But since we recorded, I bought the book and read most of it, and I can only recommend it. I left links in the podcast episode description to Waleed's book on different shopping platforms, and you can also find links to the different state management libraries there. That's enough of the chit-chat. Let's listen to this amazing discussion with Waleed. In this episode, my guest is Waleed Arshad. Welcome, Waleed. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Before we get started, could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Waleed, and I'm from Karachi, Pakistan. And I work in a US-based company called Tendermint, and they're working on blockchain-based distributed networks. And I'm working for them as a Flutter developer. I'm a Google Developer Expert for Flutter in Pakistan. I was the first in my country and in the region. I have been working in Flutter since it was launched in beta, and I have been contributing through articles, through events, and I'm also running a community here in Pakistan, which is globally recognized by Google, and we are supported by Google, and we sometimes get funds also to host events for Flutter. And I've also written a book on Flutter. Managing State in Flutter Pragmatically, and it's in pre-order right now, and you can, you know, always order it and read it and discuss it with me if you guys have any questions or any confusions about it. And other than that, I am working remotely here in Pakistan, and I usually spend a lot of day coding in Flutter.
How did you get started in software development? So how did you find out about software development and coding, and how did you get started?
Yes, so I was into computers since my childhood. So I had this passion of coding and this passion of creating softwares and the passion of computer science. So I had in my mind since the beginning that I wanted to go into computers. Whatever it is, like whatever field it is, but I'm going to surely go into computer science. So that was my initial goal. And then I learned about software development in my university and about coding. And then I went into my first coding job. Then I learned about Flutter. And then we started building in Flutter. And then we migrated our company's app to Flutter, and then, you know, pitched them to the management, and then they adopted Flutter professionally. So that's where my professional career with Flutter started. And then, you know, I created all the community stuff and then articles and stuff like that.
What are the technologies that you used before Flutter?
I was using Xamarin as a cross-platform mobile application. And before that, I was using, you know, I was coding in Java and C#. And I have been into native development as well, like like a few months on native iOS and a few months on native Android. But that was, you know, not a lot of it. I have been working with machine learning as well in Python and, you know, all the Jupyter Notebook stuff. But that's all, you know, very little part of my career. So majorly I'm working with mobile development in cross-platform technologies.
And how did Flutter feel after Xamarin? And you mentioned also native. So why did you like Flutter? I assume you liked Flutter because you wrote a book about it. So why did you like Flutter?
Basically, you know, Flutter has a very prominent and a very good developer experience. So, you know, I think that Flutter is the only technology that focused actually on the developer experience, that how do developers feel when they are writing apps, which obviously in turn contributed to the productivity of the app, to the quality of the application, to the quality of the builds, you know, to everything. Like if the developer is, you know, not frustrated and is happy while coding, you know, everything ahead of that goes smooth. So, you know, that's what I like about Flutter. It has very good developer experience and it's backed by Google. So, you know, they listen to the problems and they solve it very early, and it's faster than any other, you know, cross-platform technology. It is actually like as advertised by Google. So Google advertised it like fast hot reload and, you know, faster development and very swift development, all of that. So, you know, all of that was really much closer to what that was advertised. So that was, you know, very good thing about Flutter.
And your book is about state management. Could you explain us what state management even means?
Yeah, my book is about state management and I have discussed different techniques there. It's actually a recipe book where I have collected different techniques that are popular right now, and then I just combined them into single piece. State management is actually, you know, when whatever changes your app goes through, be it with user interactions or, you know, how your app responds to an incoming call, like when you are using your app, you get a call or your internet connection drops. So how, you know, all the changes that application goes through, how you convey them to the user, that's what state management is. So it's about the changes from one state to another. So an application is in a single state and then something happens, either a user taps a button or internet connection drops or something that happens, and then the application has another state. So it goes into some other state, and then how do you actually convey that to the user? That's what state management is. So it's all about from one state to another, you know, from one set of variables to another set of variables. That was state management is.
What are the options that are available for me without importing any libraries, and what are the options that are part of Flutter or Dart?
Okay, so Flutter actually uses inherited model, inherited widget. So, you know, all the states that are driven down to the widget tree, they are used by inherited widget. So if you want to use some state management that is, you know, that is not outside of Flutter, that is, you know, implicitly a part of Flutter library, so you better use inherited widget. That's what Flutter recommends as well, because Flutter is using itself inherited widget, inherited model. So that's what, you know, there is without any packages. But since, you know, it's a lot of boilerplate code and a lot of setup and a lot of rewriting of code, therefore, you know, we got all the packages in place so that, you know, the end user, like the end developer, should not worry about what's going underneath, and, you know, should not write a lot of boilerplate code every time when he's setting up something. So that's what, you know, that's actually why the packages came into being. So there are two things that you can do with Flutter without any packages. That is, first of all, it's set state, which you can use within your widgets. And second, it's inherited widget or inherited model. That's what you can use.
What is the difference between inherited widget and inherited model?
Okay, so there is one slight difference between them, which I think that I found while writing the book as well, because we usually don't go through inherited widget or inherited model a lot because we have all the packages already. So when we are learning something, you know, we just go to the package and, you know, import it. So actually I learned the basic difference between them when I was writing the book. So it's like when you don't want certain widgets to rebuild. So whenever you are using inherited widget, so wherever you use that the whole widget rebuilds whenever the state changes, and the widget tree underneath rebuilds whenever the state changes. But with inherited model, you can give aspect values to that, and you can, you know, set some aspect values which are there for rebuilding, and you can set some aspect values which are there for not rebuilding. So you can choose actually which widgets you want to rebuild. For suppose an example is that you have a screen where you have a button and a counter. That's the basic counter example. So if you press the button, so you know you are going to go to inherited widget and update the state through the button. But you might not want to build the button again because the button is not changing. Like button is there, it's plus, it's already there. So why that button widget should rebuild? It should not rebuild. That's, you know, when you scale the application, when you talk about big apps, so then you worry about all of these little rebuilds. So this button should not rebuild. That's where the inherited model comes in. You know, you can pass the aspect value so that only the counter widget that you are looking and the number that rebuilds only, and the button does not rebuild. So that's the basic difference that I found out when writing the book. So that's what, and you can do that in Provider as well, and in Riverpod as well, and in other packages as well. They have their own set of variables, but the basic idea is, you know, you can, the difference between these two state managements is, you know, you can choose what to build and what not to.
So the problem with set state and inherited widget and inherited model is that it's basically very cumbersome to write, right? So, or is there anything else that makes it very impractical for bigger applications?
Set state, you know, you can literally fit any state management into any application. It's mm-hmm. all up to you. You know, Flutter has a very open architecture. So you can build your complete app using set state. You can, you know, it's not impossible, but it will be a lot of mess because set state is actually, you know, rebuilding the widget itself. So if, you know, if you want to have some data in a particular screen that is coming in from another screen, so you need to pass it down to every widget that's, you know, that's there. So if you want to have some data in the sixth screen and you have the data in the first screen, you need to pass it down to every screen when you're using set state, because you don't have any place where the state is maintained. So that sixth screen cannot read the state outside of the widget. So it needs to read the state inside of the widget, and for that the state needs to be inside. So that's, you know, you need to pass down the values, you know, when you're using set state. So that's not recommended. You know, you will be, when you scale your app or when your app gets bigger, you will yourself be, you know, messed up inside the code that what's happening. So therefore, you know, all of these packages are there. Inherited widget is a very good example. You know, you can use that because it sits on the top of your application. And you can, you know, automatically inherit the state in any screen anywhere in the application since it's all wrapped up. But there's a lot of boilerplate code that you need to, you know, write for inherited widgets. And obviously, the other packages like Provider and Riverpod, they are built over inherited widgets. So if you go to the Provider package on PubDev, so it literally says that it's a wrapper over inherited widgets. So, you know, it is an enhancement for the developers.
Okay. And you mentioned already a couple of state management solutions. Could we maybe talk like 2-3 minutes about each of them and what are the pros and cons of each? So could we maybe start with block and qubit? So regarding that, I have a question. I didn't follow block so closely recently. And I think the last time I used block, they didn't have qubit yet. So could we maybe first explain what block is? So for example, what it stands for, and how does qubit came into the picture?
So block stands for business logic component. So what it does is it decouples your UI from your business logic. That's what, you know, block actually is. And you create a block for one business logic inside your application. So it actually uses streams to communicate. So you keep on adding streams to the block in the form of events. So whenever a user taps something, an event is added to the stream, and that stream, you know, that event updates the state, and it does something, and then it returns the state back to the application in the form of streams. So it's all streams. Block is all streams. What's the difference between block and qubit is, you know, you don't need one step in qubit. So a qubit is one step less than block. So you don't need the actions for qubit. So in block, you need an actions file where the actions are translated to the block. In qubit, you just directly call the functions inside your qubit, and you know they manage the states. So it's not a big difference, but it's just a slight enhancement, or you can say slight simplicity. But recently I just found out that qubit is now a part of block. So qubit is not a separate library now, it's a part of block. So if you are using Flutter block from the package, so you can use qubit as well within the same package. You don't need to, you know, integrate another package. So they are quite similar, very, very similar. So therefore, you know, it's all inside a single package now.
Okay. So basically with block, we have events coming in and the block is emitting states, yeah. Right? Okay.
Yeah.
And I would still keep the blocks, so business logic components, quite lean. And then mm-hmm. I delegate the logic to basically outside of block, right? So, mm-hmm. or would I just stuff everything in a block and do all the business logic there? Or more, it serves more as a connector between the UI and business logic, right? So the block itself would be pretty lean. Usually,
yeah, you can, you know, actually it's like other than state management inside a Flutter app, it's all about how you code. So you can, you know, create repositories or abstractions for your database, or you know, you can create a network layer, you know, further layering, you know, you can do that. But the basic idea of state management is how you reflect states to the UI. So you can always write all the stuff inside the block, like API calls, business logic, you know, JSON parsing, all of that inside the block. You can do that. It's not, you know, it's not a hard and fast rule. But whenever you are architecturing the application and whenever your application goes big, so then, you know, you need to decouple a lot of other things as well, not just the block with the UI. So that's what you told. You told that you should keep your block lean as well. So your block should then communicate towards some repository or towards some abstractions to get in the data and then process it. So block is highly coupled with the UI. So it's for a single UI and it's reflecting the states to there. So that's all up to you. How do you architecture your app?
Okay. And I think I also remember that I heard that the block package the block concept precedes the block package, and it was used also back in the Angular Dart days. So what's the difference between the block library, like the package, and the basically the concept of block? Maybe do you know that?
I have, you know, very little idea about the web versions or websites, you know, all the web frameworks. So I don't have a lot of idea about it, but you know, the business logic idea actually came, I guess it came from the web. So, you know, it the modular approach and the business logic idea, the components, you know, and decoupling different logics from one another and then, you know, communicating them through blocks. So that's all the idea that came from web, I guess. I might be wrong, but I think that it came from web. So simple block was there firstly, and I guess it was, I don't know a lot about it, but it was for Dart, I guess. So then Flutter block came into existence, and you know, it's an enhancement to block, since there were some some more enhancements. There are always, you know, areas of improvement. So Flutter Block came, that's the latest package, and you can use it with minimum boilerplate code, with minimum, you know, minimum hassle. So, you know, all of these packages that come in day on weekly basis, on monthly basis, you know, they all are meant to make your life less hassle, you know, in less complicated. So that's what, you know, it's all about. So I might not know a lot about where Block came from, but yeah, I guess that it's coming from the modular approach.
Could we talk maybe a little bit about Provider and Riverpod? So I think they are both written by Remy. And we already talked a little bit about Provider, that it's basically the inherited widget kind of made usable, because I basically wrote inherited widgets on my own a couple of times, and it's a lot of code and a lot of things to keep in mind to make it work and make everything reactive. And I believe that's where the provider idea came from, that the using inherited widgets should not be that difficult. What does Riverpod have to do with provider apart from the same author? Do they share other similarities?
What I think when I was exploring Riverpod, you know, a few months back, so if you go to the package and you go to the main readme page of Riverpod, it says that, you know, it solves some problems that are there in provider, like you know, compile time, you know, runtime errors, that, you know, you might end up in null values when you are reading, or, you know, you are watching the variables from provider, you might get null variables. So Riverpod, you know, that catches the programming errors. So if you go to the pubdev package of Riverpod, it tells you that it has two or three problems that it solves from provider. So one of them is, you know, catching the programming errors in compile time rather than runtime. So all the null values that you might read through context.read or context.watch functions, you might get a null from that using provider. So that's what one problem that Riverpod solves. It ensures that, you know, your code is testable. So that's what, you know, Riverpod does. It makes us easier to, you know, test our code. Provider was basically, you know, the initial thing that came into being after inherited widget. And right now, if you go to some polls, to some community polls that say which state management is the best and which is the most popular, you will always find provider, because, you know, it's the easiest to use and easiest to implement, and it takes very less time and very less boilerplate code to set up. And, you know, it's really cool. And then, you know, Riverpod came into being, and it solves a lot of problems there. But still, every person has their own opinions regarding state management techniques. So yeah, whatever suits best for you. So Riverpod came into being to, you know, solve some problems that were there in provider at first. But I discussed provider with some guy recently in the last week, and he said that, you know, provider has solved some of the problems that were there already. So I guess provider has also improved itself. It's not just, you know, Riverpod that enhances provider. Provider itself is also improving. So I guess for those who are using provider, they should not, you know, they should not worry about shifting to Riverpod. And I believe that holistically, if you talk about state management, so it's more about, you know, how you architecture your app, how clean code you write, or, you know, how much software design principles you follow. It's about that. It's not just about state management. You know, you can use provider or you can use Block, and still you can mess your app, you know, you can mess up your app. It's because you're not using them correctly. So it's more about, you know, how you build your architecture and how good you write your code. So, you know, it's all about that. You can use Riverpod, you can use provider, any of that. But if you lay down your architecture well enough, you can, you know, use any state management and be successful with it.
Yeah, I think those are Very good points. I think in the end, it's state management. I mean, we talk a lot about it, but in the end, everything depends on how you architecture the app, whether you write clean code, like readable code, you write your tests. I mean, like the particular state management solution that you decide to include in your application is just a small piece of the puzzle, I guess.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah. And now that we kind of went in that direction, so what are the key ideas that all the state management solutions share? So we kind of talked about they kind of manage state and handle events and emit states or kind of call listeners or notify about state changes. So what are the key ideas that most, if not all, state management solutions share?
So basically all of them share one basic key idea, and that's when your user is interacting with your application, you fire some events. You can call them functions for qubits, you can call them actions for block, you can call them basic functions for provider, and then the whatever state management you are using, it echoes back your state to the UI. You can call that emit for qubit, or yield for block, or change notifier for notify listeners for provider. It's all about naming conventions. So basic idea is telling the state management library to update the state, or to bring in the data, to show the loading state, to show the error state. So the basic idea of state management is you should be able to convey properly what the application is going through right now. That's what, it's important. You can always do that with any state management, but certain state management techniques help you do it better. And if you are familiar with some techniques, then, you always do it better than other techniques. So it's all about which technique suits you well and which technique suits well with your architecture that you want to lay down. So it's all about, it's all about that.
Okay. And do you have any other architecture recommendations? Like keeping in mind that, whatever state management solution we use, do you have any advice, especially for beginners, on how to architect their applications?
Once, my previous boss, he told me one thing, and he also used to tell a lot of things, he used to tell this thing to a lot of people. So this, the point is that you should begin with the basic thing and then improve along the way. So you should know when you're starting your application, you should know how complex your app can get to a maximum level. And then you should choose certain architecture or certain, state management, so that you know that my application can get this much complex at max. And for this much complex, I can use this architecture and this state management. For the beginners, the basic idea should be that you should decouple your UI with your business logic. That's what the basic MVC is. We all know MVC, like Model View Controller. It's all over the place and everybody's implementing it. So you should always begin with MVC, basic MVC, so that all your layers should be independent. So model should be independent, controller should do its own tasks, and view should do its own tasks. As long as you keep the MVC part intact, you can always, further drill down your architecture and, create it into MVVM or MVP or whatever you want. But basically, you should start and you should keep your MVP intact, so that you don't mess up when your application goes big, or you want to add some feature, or you want to make it testable. All of these things create a lot of mess when you don't have decoupling in your application. So, you know, that's what one suggestion is, that you should always start with the basic one and at least implement MVC.
Okay. So I have experience using a block provider. I've taken a look at Riverpod, and I also used Getit. I don't know too much about MobX and Redux. Could you maybe share where MobX and Redux come from, and we talked about state management solutions that most they share similarities, but they also, I assume, they must differ in some sense. So could you maybe say a couple of words about MobX and Redux?
So MobX and Redux, they both are derived from React-based approaches. So Redux is a lot used in React. So we have been listening about Redux from React developers, from React community. So actually Redux is derived from there. So what Redux does is, you know, as long as I have discussed with a lot of people from web developers and from mobile developers, and what I learned while writing the books, because, you know, we haven't used Redux. I also didn't use Redux before, you know, I was writing the book. So just like you, I always, you know, using provider and blog and Riverpod and stuff like that. So I never, you know, went down to Redux. So when, you know, when I was writing the book, I was researching on what actually Redux is. So what I understood is Redux is something which is derived from React framework, and it's mainly focused on keeping the state at a single place. So if your application is something which is keeping the state at a single place, all the state like one in one single place, then you should, you know, go for Redux, like bringing in all the data in the beginning of the in the start of the application and keeping it at one place, and then, you know, reading and writing to it, and then communicating it, you know. So there is a repository, main repository, that fills up when the app starts from the backend, and that repository is used all over the, you know, app lifecycle, you know, all the screens, all the logics, and all the modules use that same ground truth data. So, you know, in that case, you might want to use Redux. Regarding MobX, MobX is, you know, famous for auto generation of code. So you can, you know, just write a single class and run a command, which is, you know, basically from Build Runner. If you guys know Build Runner, so you can, you know, always search for it. Build underscore runner is a package which generates code for you. So it can generate JSON classes. It can generate boilerplate code for state management. It can generate a lot of stuff. So for MobX, you know, I also discussed that in the book as well. So if you guys go and read the book after it's out, you will see that MobX is having the least amount of boilerplate code. A lot lesser than other techniques. So you just write a single class and a function, and, you know, it creates the actual state management code itself. So you don't need to, you know, write all the observables, all the notifiers and stuff like that. So, you know, MobX is, you know, used a lot in auto code generation. And by the way, the application that I'm working right now, I'm using MobX in that. So I'm not using the auto generation part, but yeah, I'm using MobX in that for my application.
Ah, interesting. I didn't know too much about MobX. And now that you described it, it sounds actually very, very interesting, and it sounds very good. I didn't like Redux because of all the, I think it was too much ceremony. I mean, that's what I heard, and also I used Vue.js, and there it was a bit too much. So I used Vue.js, and I used Vue.x, which is kind of like a Vue version of Redux. And even there, it was a bit too much ceremony. But now that you describe MobX, it sounds actually pretty promising. And I'm also, as we are talking, I'm scrolling through the documentation, and it It sounds pretty interesting. I wonder why people don't talk about it that much. I always hear Riverpod, provider, and blog, but I didn't hear about Mobex too much recently. So I knew it for a long time. It exists, but I think it didn't have that much buzz or that much. Yeah. Anyway, sorry for rambling. But yeah,
no issues.
And how do you find Mobex? So basically, what's your experience with Mobex? You mentioned that you are using Mobex now.
Yeah, Mobex is good as long as you know how to use it. Like if you guys, you know, are going for Mobex, so you should know where to use it, where not to use it. And like I use it, like I have a very, when the application that I'm working with, it's a blockchain based application in my workplace. So that's a very big architecture. So state management is a very, very small part of our application. It's a lot about abstractions and architecture and you know, different kinds of data coming in from different sources. So, you know, state management is a very small part of my application. So it doesn't matter, you know, what I use, like Mobex or blog or whatever. So it's not, you know, it's not important. It's not a lot important for bigger apps where we have a lot of big architectures. So yeah, I feel that Mobex can be used in big apps for state management with less architecture as well, since it generates a lot of boilerplate code for you. So yeah, we should try Mobex in our applications. And I also discussed this in the book as well. We can also try hybrid approaches. You know, we can use two state managements in a single application. But that's, you need to be very careful while doing that, because you know, you can always mess up. So yeah, you can use multiple state management as well, because Flutter is all open and you can always use whatever you want. So yeah, I have positive reviews for Mobex.
Okay. Yeah, it's actually a good example. At one of the projects, I started with provider, and then some problems were, maybe I was just not experienced enough, but some problems just felt much more natural in using streams and blocks, and I kind of switched to block for a little bit. But I think it's also a very good point that you mentioned, that it's also important to not jam 3-4 different state management solutions in one application, because even two, it was I kind of regretted it that I put the second one in, because then when a second developer joined, it was confusing for him. Of course, I could ship faster, because I don't know, with block, it just felt so, like the problem that I was facing just felt so natural. And with provider, I struggled a little bit. But I think that's a good point, that you can use multiple state management solutions in one application, but you need to think about it. Like,
And I also mentioned this in the book as well. There's one tip regarding using multiple state management solutions. So, you know, for people who are listening to this podcast, you better get the book and, you know, read that tip, because it actually tells you that if you ever want to use multiple state management solutions in a single application, what should be the use case that you know, that should prompt you to use multiple state management. So that's what it is discussed in the book. So yeah, you can always, you know, go and read it and tell me the reviews about how you liked it.
Yeah, awesome. I have one more question. I wanted to talk about one last state management solution, which is Binder. So I never really, again, I didn't spend too much time researching Binder, because, of course, I don't have infinite time. I didn't have time to look into every state management solution that is out there. I just glanced through the README, but I didn't really understand how. So I didn't get it. So why does it exist and what makes it special?
I also have the same sort of reviews about Binder that you have right now. I was researching on Binder and I was not able to calculate why I should use Binder, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, people have some vision about it, or people have some sort of use case about it. But since, you know, we guys have not used a lot of it, like a lot of Binder, because maybe it's not famous, or maybe it's not as better as it should be. So, you know, I also, but the package says that its aim is to separate the application state from business logic that updates it. And that's, you know, pretty much mm-hmm. the thing that a lot of state management techniques do. So it actually binds the view logic with the view. So you have the logic binded with the view. So it's actually tightly coupled. The logic is tightly coupled with the view. So for a single view, you have a single view logic. And that, you know, that's the basic idea, I think. As long as, you know, as far as I have researched for it, and I created, you know, the cart application and the counter application and all of that. So I just got the idea that it's just, you know, binding the view with the view logic, and that's it. You know, it's when you start implementing it, even if you implement the counter application, it's really complicated. There are a lot of keywords like scope, and you know, you write and then read stuff, and then there is a logic class that you implement, and then, you know, there is a logic reference as well, some logic reference. I don't know, there are a lot of things inside, and you know, it was a little confusing. But at that time when I was creating the counter application and the cart application, it's you know, a few months back, obviously I don't remember a lot of stuff from it, but when I was creating it, it was understandable. It's not like it's going over the head, but mm-hmm. but you know, you don't, you know, grasp a lot of it.
Okay yeah and I think I want to mention that I, for example, when I go to the Binder package on PubDev, it's well documented, 100% test coverage, everything is clear. So I just don't have experience with it. And I didn't like immediately understand how it's different from other state management solutions, mm-hmm. or what's the unique value that it wants to propose or give users. But it doesn't mean it's bad. So I think if you people have time, and I will also check it out in detail. So I would really encourage everyone to check out all of these, and also buy your book. And I think it's, then you can maybe understand things better, and just work through everything.
Yeah.
Awesome. Then I have one more question, which I don't like to ask, but now that we talked about so many state management solutions, I need to ask it. So what is the state management solution that you would recommend for beginners?
I think that the beginners, like the ones who are actually starting to learn Flutter, they should not learn a lot of heavy state management solutions, unless they learn the basics, like building the UI and navigations and, you know, API calls and stuff like that using set state. So, you know, the applications that they're going to build are going to be, you know, personal portfolios and simple, you know, simple applications that just bring in data from one place to another and, you know, show it in some screens, multiple screens, 2, 3, 4, 5 screens, and, you know, you can manage that with set state. So when you're learning that, so you are actually learning the core concepts, you know, the core widgets, how the widgets are laid out, how you do navigation stuff, how you implement callbacks, and, you know, the basic things. After that, you know, the people should learn multiple state management. I recommend that people should learn provider, people should learn block, people should learn at least provider and block, obviously. If you know, they want to explore more, they should learn both of the variations of these state management techniques. Like provider has RiverPort, block has Qubit, so they should learn both of them. And this should be quite easy, because once you have learned one technique, you know, you can always learn the enhancement very early and very easily. So block, provider, and RiverPort, these are the ones that, and I would also highly recommend to explore inherited widget. And at least once in your lifetime, you need to create one complete feature using inherited widgets, so that you actually understand what goes on beneath provider. So sometimes you get stuck in provider. Sometimes provider gives you a lot of pain, and that's actually because we sometimes, you know, don't know what's going on underneath. So when you implement inherited widget, actually, so that's what, you know, the provider is built upon. So I would highly recommend, you know, beginners to implement inherited widget, provider, block, RiverPort. And if you know, they want to explore some techniques, some distinctive techniques, which, you know, like we have, I also discussed inside my book, we have GetX, I guess. GetX is, I guess, the one which gives you navigations and gives you, you know, gives you navigations. Well, you know, get.put. Yeah, I guess that. So, you know, if you guys want to explore something, you know, something specific or something, you know, out of the box. So, yeah, you should explore GetIt and GetX.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, also wanted to mention that the third episode of the Flutter 101 podcast was recorded with Thomas Burkhardt, and we talked about RVMS architecture, we talked about GetIt commands and more. And I think that's also one of my favorite episodes of the podcast, because so there we talked about GetIt and also like a minimalist approach to state management. So I think that could also be interesting for the listener. I wanted to highlight the basically one article that I found on Medium, which is this Flutter state management for minimalist. I think Surag. I will leave links in the description. Just basically walks through what is a very minimal approach to state management, and he kind of implements a state management solution with very little dependencies. So I think that would be also interesting. Do you have maybe any recommendations as well?
Yeah, no, not a lot of recommendations, but you know, we should always keep on exploring. Like for all the technologists out there, for all the people who are learning Flutter and all the people who are learning technology, the basic idea of being, you know, in technology is that you should be technologically adaptive. So, you know, we should not stick to one thing. We should not stick to one state management. And if you talk about state management to different people, you will listen to a lot of different opinions. So you will always listen to people saying that some state management is not good and some state management is better than others. And, you know, you will always listen to stuff like that. So it's all about what you experience. It's all about how you code. It's, you know, it's subjective, you know, it's all subjective. It's not one for all. And, you know, it's not like if I say that provider is good and provider is very good, it's not about that. It's all about, you know, what you do and how you architect your app and what is your use case and what management technique fits your use case best. So, you know, you need to find that out. And that's why, you know, the book is written. You know, you need to actually find out what's best for your application. So you don't do like this. Like I also, if we have time, I just want to take 2 more minutes in you know,
please take your time.
Yeah, yeah. In explaining this one thing that I learned through some people. So it's, you know, whenever a client approaches you with a solution, like not with a solution, with a problem or with an application idea, so you don't actually try to fit what you have learned into that idea. You don't do that. That's you know, that's not fair. That whatever you know, you try to fit that to that idea. No, whatever the idea is, you should find out the best possible technology that should be used in order to build that particular idea. That should be your, you know, your motive, that whatever technology is best to build that idea, you should, you know, use that. And if you don't know that, you should hire people for that, or you should learn that. So for support, if you want to build a backend for any e-commerce website or for any, you know, website, so you are, you know, you obviously going to think about Node.js or Golang or, you know, some .NET Core or something like that. So, you know, you will choose one of these, and, you know, then obviously I'm not a backend developer, but whatever's the best for that particular use case, you're going to choose that. You know, nobody's going to say that Node.js is the best, or, you know, for some reason XYZ is the best. So it's all about design driven. It should be design driven. Whatever the use case is, use case should drive the state management. It comes down to state management as well. So whenever you're given a mobile application idea, that idea should drive your state management. Your state management should not drive the idea. That's, you know, that's what the basic idea is.
Thank you. Yeah, I think very, very good points. Then I think it's time to wrap things up. Where can our listeners find you online and follow you?
I have LinkedIn and I have Twitter, and I am pretty much active on both of the platforms, and I reply to almost all the messages. So I keep zero unread messages on all the platforms. So yeah, I am pretty much responsive. I might respond late to some queries, like the queries that allow me, like those queries that compel me to open my laptop and, you know, research for them a little bit. But for others, you know, I always, you know, respond immediately. So yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter. Just search for my name, Waleed Arshad, and, you know, you will find me.
Yeah. Awesome. And then thank you for talking about state management. And I want to congratulate you for writing the Managing State in Flutter Pragmatically book, because I assume it's been a huge undertaking. It's been probably a ton of work and effort, and I'm really looking forward to buying the book and reading the book. And yeah, thank you for joining.
Thank you so much. Thank you for hosting me, and it was really nice talking to you. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please do me a favor and recommend the episode to your friends. Both online and in-person recommendations are appreciated. So share either on social platforms such as Twitter and LinkedIn, or just mention the podcast to your coworkers and software developer friends. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so that you don't miss the next episode. The podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and many others. You can also listen to the podcast directly from your web browser on flutter101.dev, that is flutter101.dev. You will also find an RSS feed there. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review. It only takes a couple of seconds and can help the podcast reach a bigger audience. Have a great day, and see you next time.